You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Just looking at this list reminds me of how much I actually went to the movies in the 80s, you know, which I don't go now.
Yeah, it's actually quite funny that way, because it was like, my God, I've seen so many 80s movies, and even now, like the modern day movies, some of them, there's so many of them that I really don't get excited about. And then even the ones that I do get quasi excited about, I don't run out to go see. You know, they got to be something like Star Wars, or they've got to be something like the Avenger movies.
True. But in the 80s, you couldn't just go home and wait for it to come out and stream it, you know?
Right. Right. Exactly. We have more
options.
You
have to run out and see it. Yeah. You have to see it on the screen.
Yep. And, you know, you had that video market that was kind of coming up, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen with VHS? You know, maybe it'll stick around. Who knows? But, yeah, hey, it's, you know, definitely a lot easier now, where it's like, is that a movie that I need to go see at the movie theater, or can it wait and I'll catch it on demand, you know, when it's available?
Yeah.
So.
On my nice big TV, you know. It works just as well.
Yep. It's like, oh, I don't have to go to the theater and get a ticket, stand in line, and then I got to share
previews and five ads, and
I got to share the armrest with the dude next to me, and forget it. Too much hassle. But yeah, there's definitely some movies though that I think warrant, you know, getting out there and seeing it like as early as you possibly can. In fact, there was one of them that I watched on one of my plane rides overseas. That not this recent time, but the time before, I watched a Day in Hollywood, I think it's called.
Okay.
I keep getting it wrong. The Quentin Tarantino movie that's got Brad Pitt.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
There you go.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I haven't watched it. Yep. Haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a great movie, and you know, I was surprised because I was thinking it was a Tarantino flick. You're going to get a lot of, you know, just his trademark of bad language. And it wasn't all that, and it wasn't as bloody and gory as you typically get with a Tarantino movie. So it was surprisingly different for him, it was fun. It was just a fun movie. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad that it's getting the critical acclaim that it is now. So that's
I thought it was supposed to be dark. Maybe I'm just not paying enough attention.
you know, if you look at it from the ominous Charles Manson family thing going on in it, then you kind of go, okay, you know, there's that aspect of it. But the majority of it is just kind of the Leonardo dealing with being a, you know, once was the shit with being, you know, a really great actor, and now he's kind of getting left by the sidelines, and he's kind of coming to terms with how to deal with that, you know, having success at one time and not being as successful as he used to be.
Okay.
So that's more around what the movie's about, but you do have the ominous kind of, you know, right around the corner of the Manson family thing going on.
Yeah, it was a bad trip.
Yeah. All right. So let's get started with next one.
This is 80-something podcast.
Banzai!
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 Hey, where's the meat? I don't think there's anybody back there.
Have you or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Ghostbusters!
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
it to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey everybody, this is Bonsai Retro Club. I am Dave. Online, I've got Suzanne.
Hi there.
All right, so what we're going to do is remind everybody what we're doing on this. We have the essential movie list from RottenTomatoes.com. We found this, and we decided that we want to make a podcast episode about every one of these movies. So we're counting down from 140, working our way to number one. We're all the way up to 1981. We're already to episode 81, and this being Little Shop of Horrors, released 1986. As I do at the beginning of these episodes, I'll insert the trailer, so I will insert it here.
Now, the most menacing musical comedy ever to paint the silver screen, Scream, Little Shop of Horrors. Where did you get such a weird flair? Thrill to the romance.
Will you marry me?
Witness the drama.
You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing pain.
I've been saving all month for this. I think I need a root canal. I'm sure I need a long, slow root canal.
Feed me, Cobblepot! Feed me now!
Savor the spectacle of the first plant in motion picture history ever to sing for its supper. Starring Rick Moranis, Ellen Green, Vincent Gardenia, with a special appearance by Steve Martin, James Belushi, John Candy,
Comfy,
and Bill Murray.
It's your professionalism that I respect.
Little Shop of Horrors.
And then next up, I'll say, hey, Google, tell us about Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors is a 1986 movie directed by Frank Oz, starring Ellen Green, Rick Moranis, and Steve Martin.
Hey, Google. What's the plot of Little Shop of Horrors?
Here's the synopsis of Little Shop of Horrors. Meek flower shop assistant Seymour, Rick Moranis, pines for co-worker Audrey, Ellen Green. During a total eclipse, he discovers an unusual plant he names Audrey II, which feeds only on human flesh and blood. The growing plant attracts a great deal of business for the previously struggling store. After Seymour feeds Audrey's boyfriend, Oren, Steve Martin, to the plant after Oren's accidental death, he must come up with more bodies for the increasingly bloodthirsty plant.
Feed me, Seymour. Yes. That and also the famous, I want to be a dentist because I like giving pain. So,
yes.
This was surprisingly a really fun movie for me because I'm typically not too much into musicals, but the comedic elements of this movie just really, you know, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the ride. And I know that we had a longtime listener from back in our 80s Reboot Overdrive days. Little Shop of Horrors really struck him because it was kind of a vehicle to help him learn English because he's overseas. So that was Frederick.
Little Shop of Horrors, really?
Yeah, and he became kind of a really de facto big fan of Rick Moranis as a result of this. And he shared that story with us via email. So to me, that's always been kind of the hook with, you know, why this movie was a bit more important of a movie than like what I gave it credit for, because I always thought it was just a cute, fun musical. But knowing that somebody has kind of this, you know, relationship with it that's a little bit more than that, I think that's phenomenal. So
yeah,
I'm glad
wow.
that he was able to share that.
Very cool.
Yeah. So you wanted to join me on this movie to talk about. So why is this one important to you?
Well, I figured you would immediately guess that I'm a theater geek. So
yes. Well, I knew that, but did the listener know that?
Okay, well, listeners, Suzanne is a theater geek. Suzanne used to sing theater. And anything that is wild and theatrical, and there's people singing different parts, and it's just the film itself, I think, looks like a play. It has the feeling of a play. Like I hadn't seen the play itself, but I can see in my head how it would go, like where the three Ronette singers would be and how where they would cross the stage, and it's very theatrically done. And that's funny because if you know anything about this this film, it was based originally on like a very, very bad sci-fi movie from 1960. about, you know, a little plant from outer space that takes over the flower shop. So it was a ridiculous concept that they made into something really fun, and it was really successful. So I love it for those reasons. Just you want to sing along, you want to get up and do the dances with them. I love that Ellen Green, who I think might have sung this on Broadway, they might have pulled her from the play. She has this little tiny voice, and she's in little curvy outfits, and she talks like this, and then she sings, and she has this big booming belt voice that comes out of her, and it's just this beautiful juxtaposition of this tiny squeaky voice and a great big theater belt voice that gets you. It's just like one extra, you know, bang.
Yeah.
That you get from this. So just a lot of really great elements.
Yeah, I remember her character. It's been a long time since I've seen this one, actually. But the things that are like iconic or memorable for me is, you know, I remember the song where, you know, Rick Moranis is giving him like a few drops of blood so that the plant will grow or, you know, be healthy. You know, and he's like trying to find a vein or something like that, and he's singing about that. You know, and so I remember that, and then I remember the Steve Martin, you know, I want to be a dentist, and he's like driving his motorcycle, and you know, he's really enjoying the giving pain to people, and then you've got Bill Murray as a cameo, and he's like, "Yes, doctor, yes, yes, yes."
That is so funny. That is just such a funny gag. Yeah. The two of them together.
It's like, get out of here.
Yeah, he gets upset that the guy's enjoying himself. Yeah. Through, you know, you put the sadist together with the masochist. And yep. It should be a perfect match, but it upsets him. He throws him out of the office.
Yeah. How many times have you seen this, do you think?
I haven't seen it that many times. Maybe only like twice.
Okay.
Maybe. It's been a while.
When's the last time you think you saw it?
Not a long time. Not a long time. At least like 10 years.
Okay. Yeah, I'm probably around there somewhere.
I did see it in the theater, though.
Okay. So, favorite scene?
Favorite scene. I was going to say my favorite scene was Steve Martin and Bill Murray.
Oh, okay.
Because it is just hysterical. And to me, I thought that was kind of like a bit cameo. I didn't think that that would be the scene that everybody thought was great.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. It's hysterical. they go through a lot of hysterics. I mean, when the plant gets huge and starts singing to them and like just gobbling people up like crazy, that's pretty funny. It's just, it's a very overblown, over the top, silly film at points, but you gotta love it. You gotta run with it.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to remember some of the elements of it. And if I remember right, Steve Martin is Ellen Green's boyfriend.
Yes.
And he's abusive. And so he hits her. That makes Rick Moranis' character upset. And then that's where he ends up.
He's got a huge crush on her.
Right, right. Because he's had feelings for her for a while. And then that's why he decided to cut up Steve Martin and feed him to Audrey.
Right. If I remember, I don't think he actually murdered him. Something happened. How did he get killed? Something with the motorcycle, maybe. And so then he fed him to the plant.
Right.
And
or like Audrey 2. Audrey 2 is what he called
right,
it. Right, right,
right.
Okay.
Right. He named the plant after Audrey.
Right.
So now this is Audrey 2. But yeah, because he was beating her up.
Right.
And I think if I remember, like, people were dying, but they kind of like deserved it.
Okay. Okay.
And he tossed them to the plant. But then after a while, the plant just took over and it tried to eat everybody. And
right.
I don't know if I even remember the ending. Like, how did they get rid of him? I don't remember.
I don't remember how he got rid of. I just remember that Audrey 2 had babies, a whole bunch of babies. And
oh,
I remember
yeah, they were all singing together.
Yeah, and I remember that kind of upped the level, like, oh, he's multiplying, you know, so we got to do something about it. I just don't remember. I just remember him blowing up. I just don't remember how that came to be.
Yeah, I think he like, what is that when, like, the plants, like, they start in one place and then they have things that sprout up, like is it tubing or something? But that was, I think, what it was, like little vines started to grow and then the little heads
right.
popped up and it was like little plants.
Right.
Yeah, it was all like a Frank Oz thing where the puppeteers took over, so.
directed by Frank, so yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had to throw his signature in there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Did he end up killing his boss, too? Or did the plant
kill? I think the plant ate the boss at some point. Yeah, I think the plant ate the boss. But I think Rick Moranis' character remained pretty, like, he kept his nose clean. Like, he thought about killing the people, but the plant did it for him.
Okay.
He never actually he didn't hurt people, if I'm remembering correctly, anyway. And all he did was dream about, you know, taking off with Audrey and, you know, living in a little house with a picket fence. And, you know, they all seemed to think that would be a great idea. In the end, you know, Audrey kind of got on board with the whole thing. So, but I still don't remember how did they get away from the plant? I don't remember.
Yeah. Like I said, I seem to remember him getting blown up. I just don't remember how it came to be. The only memory I have was just the baby plants and then blowing up. That was it. So,
I think it eventually tried to eat Audrey, the real Audrey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he had to destroy it.
Had to, become a man of action.
I think so. Maybe it was dynamite. Maybe the little things are coming back to me.
Yeah. I miss Rick Moranis. I wish he was still making movies.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he did really great in this one too. Just perfectly, you know, as the meek kind of character that you would assume would be, you know, taking care of plants and beating it. That's a botanist, right? I think it's a botanist. That would be his thing, you know, and you see him as, like, the character in Ghostbusters and this, and you're like, yeah, that's, you know, I hate to typecast a guy, but, you know, he plays nerdy, smart guy really well.
Yeah, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where he was, like, the mad scientist dad.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, just comedically, just he was great. Like I said, you know, I'd missed him when he had checked out, you know, from doing movies.
Yeah. It was a loss to the comic world.
Yep. So is there anything else with Little Shop of Horrors that you want to talk about?
Not really. Really great music. Really fun, not like late 60s type of theming. Love the girls in the background who were kind of like the Supremes or the Ronettes or whatever you would like.
They were kind of the transition between scenes.
Right. They were almost like kind of the Greek chorus that would come in and sing, you know, little warnings about what was going on, and they opened the show, and they, you know, they had commentary on what was going on as they were singing. Once again, very, very theatrical device, you know? This kind of thing does not happen in the real world. You don't have people, you know, stepping in and singing warnings to you. So, that is theater.
You ever seen There's Something About Mary?
I have, but not for a long time, and I think I've seen pieces of it, you know, in different orders. I don't know if I know the complete narrative of that movie, but...
They do the same thing. There's like this guy with a guitar and a guy singing in between, the major scenes. And so that's what as you were talking, I was like, that's exactly what happens in Something About Mary. So, I think if, you have a movie that you can kind of get away with that and kind of insert that as kind of a fun way to move the story along. Then, you should. You absolutely should, because that's just fun. And then I've done that where I've seen I've gone to school plays or whatever, for my kids. And, the ones that are musicals, they'll have that kind of element where you have something in between, the scenery changes.
Right.
And... Yeah, you're right. They've been doing that for a long time, so kudos.
Going back to ancient Greece. Yep.
If it works, right?
Okay, right. Yep. It's tradition.
Yep. You and I have talked about Greece.
Mm-hmm.
We've not talked about Little Shop of Horrors. I mean, as far as, like, musicals go, I mean, it seems like we're really kind of our experts for musicals for our team here.
I love movie musicals. Okay. Well, see, the thing is, I think the reason why I ended up being a musical theater person is that my mother, and I talk about my mom a lot. She's a lot of fun. My mother was like crazy about two things, Hollywood musicals and science fiction, even really, really, really bad science fiction. Like B Hollywood black and white movies that used to play. She would explain that if you went to the movies back when she was young in the 50s, you would see like a newsreel, and then they would play cartoons, and then they would play like some kind of secondary movie that they called the B movie, which was usually really, really bad. And then you would get to see the movie that you actually went to the movie for. It was just like an all day thing.
Okay.
But then once television came on, they would play all those stupid B movies, like the 4:30 movie and stuff. She would sit me in front of the dopiest movies. But she would also sit me in front of all the Hollywood musicals, like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and My Fair Lady and West Side Story and all these really fantastic movies. Little Shop of Horrors is kind of like an intersection of both of those things. So I really like it for that reason. And I think I went into theater. I mean, I could have sung anything. I wanted to see, I'm a kind of a new wave chick too. So I would sing in bands and stuff, but I could not give up theater no matter how geeky it is to, compared to like, like Chrissy Hynde or something.
Right. Right.
It was just my thing.
I was actually in the school play my senior year in high school, and it's something that I had never done before, and we didn't sing. So it was just on a whim, I was like, I'm going to try something new for my final year of high school, because I was one of those students that just kind of blended in, and I was just kind of there. And I'm like, you know what? There's this opportunity, and they're looking for people to be in the school play. Next thing you know, I'm Benvolio and Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So
wow.
We had like three performances, and to this day, it is still one of those things that I carry around as kind of my, pivotal moments in my high school career.
That's great.
It was so much fun. And, I now get to, live vicariously through my daughter when she was going through high school. She's already graduated, but she was in the school musicals. And I couldn't be more prouder. And I just, when I'm watching her on stage, it takes me back to the feeling of when I was performing in front of everybody. And, mm-hmm. The excitement and the...
It's so much fun.
Yeah. And it's like...
So much fun.
Yeah. It's like, if you haven't done it before, I don't know how to explain it to somebody, because you keep, you have that thought like, oh, I'm just going to bomb. But... then you do it, and then it's like, wow, this is
magic.
Yeah, exactly. I even remember our final performance. We were doing it for the school. So there was a Romeo, Benvolio, and Mercutio. The three of us were standing kind of in a row together. And we're when we first go to the party where Romeo first meets Juliet, there was a Mercutio comes out and he points to the three of us and he says, "That's a Capulet." And at that point, because we're performing for the whole school, the three of us had decided to do the Three Migos salute. So we do the, you know, the hand over hand and, huh! And it got such a laugh. And, you know, of course, nobody knew it but the three of us that we're going to do it. But, you know, you have fun like that. You have fun with your co-stars and, you know, you do, you know, stupid random stuff like that that just makes the performance unique and fun.
Absolutely.
And I went way off tangent on that one. That's fantastic.
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's good because that's fun. And I remember a similar moment. Because I mean, I always loved to sing. I mean, since I was a little girl, I would sing. But there's a big difference between just like singing because it's fun and, you know, when you're walking to school or whatever, and actually getting up on a stage and doing that kind of thing in front of people. That's a whole different world. But the first time I actually, we had variety shows at my school that were called the Mad Shows, which the teachers were in, kids were in. It was like just like this really cool mishmash of, and if you got into the Mad Show, you were like the, you know, it was like you were the bomb. That was automatically you got to be a cool kid. And I talked my way, I guess sang my way into the show when I was in 11th grade. And I had not real, other than day camp, I hadn't really done much on stage until that point, despite, you know, singing all the time. And I still, like you're saying, I remember that first moment when that curtain opened and I was standing there on the stage and there was that audience and it was just the biggest thrill of my life. Yeah. Was that moment.
The closest I got, you know, that I can like relate it to is if you're into roller coasters, you know, you have that thrill of, oh my God, I have no idea what's going to happen right here. And then you like, you know, you
go with it.
You
yeah.
go with it and you just have the time of your life and you survive. And it's that thrill. It's the thrill of, you know, just putting yourself out there and just seeing if you could do it. And you surprise yourself. And to me, it was, like I said, so instrumental and pivotal, you know, in my high school career. And, you know, maybe it was like something I should have done more of since. But I just never really, you know, I guess, you know, the line that you always hear is, you know, you stop while you're ahead. And then maybe that was me. I'm like, okay, I was Benvolio. I'm good.
Okay.
Check out.
Well, I'm glad you had such a good time.
Yeah.
You got to experience that.
Yep. And like I said, it's like one of those things where I you know, that wasn't a typical thing for me. So it was definitely a stretching kind of opportunity. And I think by proxy, maybe that's kind of why I eventually fell into doing podcasting, because I wanted a creative outlet and, you know, get to perform, get to, I don't know, show off. Does that sound right? I don't think I'm showing off.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, you're talking to somebody who's been a big show off for years. So you don't have to apologize to me.
I guess I'm apologizing to myself. I mean,
sorry.
Yeah. All right. So that's Little Shop of Horrors, everybody. Even though I think the last part of the conversation wasn't about Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, but I mean, it's relative. It's based on a play.
Yeah.
I'm connecting the dots here.
No. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's important that when you know, you get to talking about personal stories that you're allowed to go, you know, off the beaten path a little bit, you know, even though it's not directly related to the movie, but it's still, you know, it's in the hemisphere. Ballpark, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what I want to do is remind everybody we have a website. That's BonsaiRetroClub.com. You can check us out there. There's links for Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Those are the ones I'd recommend you follow us on. If you do have the Podbean app, we do appreciate all of our listeners on that, and that continues to grow. So thank you so much to everybody for that. If you're on iTunes and you choose to do a rating, review, and a follow, we appreciate that as well. Suzanne's got a blog that's out there. That's suzannematabone.com. So please check that out. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Yep. And let's see, what else do we have going on? Your Twitter account, Suze Matabone.
Yep, Suze Matabone.
Yep.
And Suzanne Matabone 80s on Instagram.
Outstanding.
And yeah, there may be a couple of theater stories on the blog if anybody's interested.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. With all that, we want to remind everybody to please be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 Banzai!
Banzai! On the next episode, we're going to be talking about 1989's The Little Mermaid.
Beep, beep. Does it have to be human?
Beep, beep.
Does it have to be mine?
Beep, beep.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long.
That's right, boy.
You can do it. Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long. 'Cause if you feed me, Seymour, I can grow up big and strong.
You eat blood, Audrey, too. Let's face it. How am I supposed to keep on feeding you? Kill people?
I make it worth your while.
What?
You think this is all coincidence, baby? The sudden success around here? The press coverage?
Look, you're a plant, an inanimate object.
Does this look inanimate to you, punk? If I can talk and I can move, who's to say I can't do anything I want?
Like what?
Like deliver, pal.
Ah!
Like see you get everything your sacred, greasy, heart desires.
Would you like a Cadillac car
on a gas shot on jackpot? How about a date with Hedy Lamarr? You're gonna get it if you want it, baby.
How would you like to be a big wheel?
Dining out for every meal. I'm the plant can make it all real. You're gonna get it.
Hey, I'm your genie. I'm your friend. I'm your willing slave.
Take a chance. Feed me in. You know the kind of eats, the kind of red hot treats, the kind of sticky licky sweets I crave. Seymour, don't be a putz. Trust me in your life for sure that rival keen touch. Show a little initiative, boy. Work up some guts and you get it.
I don't know.
Come on, boy.
I don't know.
Lighten up.
I have so many strong reservations.
Tell it to the Marines.
Should I go and perform mutilations?
You didn't have nothing till you met me. Come on, kid, what will it be? Money?
Girls.
One particular girl.
How about that, Audrey?
Think it over.
There must be someone you can eat, isn't it? Real quiet like.
And get me some lunch! Think about a room at the Ritz.
Wrapped in velvet,
covered in glitter. A little nookie gonna clean up those zits and you'll get it.
Gee, I'd like a Harley machine.
Nice.
Tooling around like I was James Dean.
Yeah,
all the guys on the corner turn green.
So go get it! Woo, woo, woo! If you wanna be profound. If you really got to justify, take a breath and look around. A lot of folks. deserve to die.
Wait a minute. That's not a very nice thing to say.
But it's true, isn't it?
No. I don't know anyone who deserves to get chopped up and fed to a hungry plant.
Sure you do.